Maybe we didn't play the best, obviously. We didn't play the best that we could play. And they played very well, you know, so, and they got after us. I mean, they kicked our tail that day. And, you know, there's a point in every season where you go, hey, listen, we can pick it up. It could be early, it could be later, but that was a point where we probably all took it up a notch and needed to.
Andy Reid, head coach of the Chiefs, talking about the last time the Chiefs lost, which was way back on November the 10th in Tennessee to the Titans, 35-32, a game that the Chiefs gave away. And now here we are, the Titans and the Chiefs, AFC title game on Sunday. If the Chiefs don't choke that game away, and that's what they did, the Titans wouldn't even be here right now. And the Chiefs could be in Baltimore. So maybe the Chiefs did themselves a favor by losing to Tennessee. And then the Tennessee knocked off the Patriots and the Ravens. Of course, if Tennessee beats the Chiefs on Sunday, you'll be sitting here as a Chiefs fan going, if we had just knocked them out back on November the 10th, because that would have knocked them out. They've been 4-6. They've been dead in the water to make the playoffs. And that changed Tennessee's season completely around with that win. And you can argue it changed the Chiefs' season around after their loss. Mm-hmm. So we'll go all of that here in just a little bit. Remember, Patrick Mahomes, that was his first game back after missing two games due to that dislocated kneecap. A lot of people forget that, and I still haven't seen a national writer. I've read like four or five stories about that game, people talking about it and previewing the game on Sunday, and none of them have mentioned, hey, that was Mahomes' first game back from an injury.
Yeah.
I cannot believe that's overlooked, but hey, whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, doesn't seem like a big detail at all.
No.
You know, lack of mobility.
No.
Yeah, had nothing to do with it.
He was perfectly fine.
You bet. He's Mahomes. He's Superman. All right, local sports. Obviously, no games tonight.
Yeah, no high school basketball this evening. When we get dates on postponements and things like that, we'll be posting them at ncksports.com. The schedules will change, and we'll get all that information put out there. High school wrestling, Smith Center is supposed to be at Superior, Nebraska today, so that's off the table. Tomorrow, there is scheduled wrestling for our area, Bullitt at Marysville at 9 o'clock tomorrow morning, and then Osborne and Smith Center at Oberlin at 9:30 tomorrow morning. So those are the scheduled matches that I would think everything would go on as planned for tomorrow, as long as everything stays the way it looks it's supposed to today as far as the weather is concerned here this afternoon. So let's look at what's going on in this weekend's activities.
Okay, the NPL tournament begins on Monday. We have five games on Monday and four on Tuesday on the radio, right?
Yes, and I don't have that sheet right
now. Well, I have it right
here. Okay, you got it. Okay.
Tuscan Rock Hills Girls at 2 o'clock. You can hear on KD Country 94 on Monday. Southern Cloud and Natoma Girls will be at the high school. Then Thunder Ridge Southern Cloud Boys at 3:30. Dust will have the call on that one on KD Country 94. At 3:30, Pike Valley Chase Boys will play. And at 5 o'clock, Wilson Pike Valley Girls. At 5 o'clock, Lakeside Lincoln Girls. You can hear on KD Country 94. St. John's Tipton versus Tescott Boys at 6:30. Rock Hills Lincoln Boys, you can hear on KD Country 94 at 6:30. Wilson Natoma Boys will play at 8. And Osborne Chase Girls, the nightcap on Monday, you can hear on KD Country 94. And we'll talk more about the schedule Tuesday on Monday, but the complete look of our broadcast schedule and the complete schedule and the brackets for the NPL tournament, we have as extensive coverage as anybody. We don't cover just the one school. We cover all the area schools, and we're only going to have 17 of the 32 games on the radio. That's it, just 17.
Yeah.
Yeah. Up from 16 last year.
Yeah.
So there we go. 17 games. Dusty hopefully can have a voice after the Chiefs smoked the Titans on Sunday. Dusty has five games on the radio starting at 2 o'clock and going until probably about 9:30 or 10. He'll be done there from Lincoln. And then Tuesday, he'll have four more games to do and then gets Wednesday off, weather permitting. And then he'll do four games on Thursday, four games on Friday, then cover the Bullitt Wrestling Invitational on Saturday, and then sleep for 24 hours. So that's the plan.
That's usually
right?
What I do.
Yeah. You bet.
Maybe 22, I eat.
Okay.
But
well, got to make room for the food.
But absolutely. Other than that.
Absolutely. All that's posted at ncksports.com, be the Bullitt Trojan Channel. Also, all kinds of midseason basketball brackets, Mid-Continent League Tournament, the Orange and Black Classic, the Bullitt's competing in, which we'll have coverage of them on the radio beginning next Thursday from Colby. And all of that is posted at ncksports.com. If you're not a Chiefs fan, you may or may not understand this. I'm so excited. I want this game to start now. I want the Chiefs and Titans to play right now. Let's just go ahead. The anxiousness is starting to set in for me. I'm not nervous about it. I'm anxious for it to get started.
Mm-hmm.
I truly believe, and this is where I'm setting myself up for the biggest disappointment of all time as a Chiefs fan, but I am preparing myself. But the last time I felt this way, the Royals lost Game 7 of the World Series. But I knew there was Bumgarner that was in the background. And here, probably the guy you're thinking of is Derrick Henry.
Yeah.
I believe, I feel very, very confident. I felt very confident going in the Texan game. I even actually had a little bit of confidence down 24-0 that they still could come back. And they have number 15. And Patrick Mahomes is different. And we said last year, we said it in training camp, and then, of course, obviously, end of the year, we saw what Mahomes did, 50 touchdowns, 5,000 yards passing, and said if the Chiefs just would improve their defense, get a good defensive coordinator, and just improve their defense to middle of the pack in the NFL, that they should win a Super Bowl. Well, here we are. Here we are. The defense is a top 15 defense. It's a top 10 defense the last 6 weeks of the regular season. They've improved. And you've got a coordinator, Steve Spagnuolo, who won a Super Bowl with his defense against maybe the best team of all time, the New England Patriots, who are 18-0. His Giants beat them, and his defensive plan was tremendous. And now he's facing Ryan Tannehill. I mean, if he can beat Tom Brady and Randy Moss, why can't he beat Ryan Tannehill?
Yeah.
Well, there is Derrick Henry. And I must say, everybody got all caught up in all the yardage that Derrick Henry has had. Derrick Henry ran for 188 yards against the New England Patriots. How many points did the Titans score on offense in that game?
10?
14.
14. I couldn't remember what
14.
It was, yeah.
14. There's a pick six with 9 seconds to go.
Yeah, that made it 20.
20 to 13.
Yeah.
But I think of it as it was 14-13
game. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, last week he ran for 195 yards. Do you really think that was a difference in the game? The Titans scored 28 points, but a big reason they scored 28 points, they had 3 turnovers they forced from Baltimore, and Baltimore really had 5 turnovers because they turned over on 4th-and-1 twice. Baltimore got into Tennessee territory time after time after time and could not score touchdowns and, in some cases, didn't even get a field goal. And the Chiefs back in Week 10 against Tennessee, that's kind of what they did. They kept settling for field goals. And if they settle for field goals on Sunday, then I'm going to be a little bit concerned. But I like this matchup. I think people are like, well, the Titans, they're going to limit all the possessions and so forth and so on, and Henry's going to run the ball down our throat. That's true. But if the Chiefs hold them to field goals, I don't think Tennessee can score enough points to beat the Chiefs.
No.
Because even if the Chiefs get, say, 8 possessions, which I think they'll get more than 8, but let's say they get 8. If they score 4 touchdowns and a field goal and score on half their possessions, that's 31 points. Or 3 touchdowns and a field goal is 24 points. I don't know if the Titans will score more than 24. Now, they scored 35 against the Chiefs the last time, but that's somewhat fool's gold, and I'll go over it here in a moment. So, the Chiefs have been here before. They were in the AFC title game last year, and they have been stewing ever since they lost that game. Mahomes was looking at film after that game that night. He wanted to get back to this spot. I don't think Mahomes is going to let this team lose. That's what I feel. I think Mahomes is going to have a great game. He will not let this team lose as long as guys catch the passes and don't commit a whole bunch of penalties or fumble the ball away. The Chiefs are going to win. That's my feeling. Could be wrong. If you're a Bronco fan or, Cowboys have been a while, but if you're a Bronco fan, you know what this is like. It wasn't too long ago. You were getting ready. You were the favorite and got blown out in the Super Bowl with Peyton Manning with a monster season, and then you made it back and then you won with Peyton Manning, basically a shell of himself, but you're probably nervous and anxious. Well, you know what? It's Chiefs' turn to be that way. It's the Chiefs' turn to hold the mantle out of the AFC West and go to the Super Bowl. Andy Reid, what about that championship game experience the Chiefs had last year?
I have done a few of these, and we try to keep it as normal as we possibly can. I try to stick to that, but I've done that majority of the time. I understand. I've been there. I understand how fast the game is. I mean, I can tell you that from experience, and the magnitude of it obviously is every time you take a step up in the playoffs, the magnitude's bigger, I guess you'd say.
Now, Reid had some interesting things to say about the Titans, and all good, of course. He's not going to give them bulletin board material. And one thing, Mike Vrabel, the head coach, who actually ended his career playing for the Kansas City Chiefs, if you remember, and he won 3 Super Bowls as a Patriot playing under Bill Belichick. So Vrabel's been there, done that, but not necessarily as a head coach. And he had the guts to, hey, they invested, a high draft pick in Marcus Mariota, and it wasn't working. He went to the veteran who they signed from the Dolphins, Ryan Tannehill, and he had the guts to make the quarterback change, and the Titans have taken off ever since, and Andy Reid acknowledges that.
Yeah, he's made some tough decisions, done a good job in a lot of areas, but that's one of the toughest ones you have to make, and both of them are good kids, so it's not because it's disrupting the team that way, but you have to, he made a decision where you got to play the best guys at that particular time of the season. That's what he chose to do.
Think about what the Titans have done here. The last game of the regular season, the Texans rested some of their starters, including Deshaun Watson. but they had to beat the AFC South champion to punch their ticket to the playoffs. They had to win that game in Week 17. Had to, or they wouldn't have been in. Then they had to beat the AFC East champion Patriots in New England, took care of them. Then the AFC North champion, a number one seed Baltimore on the road, took care of them. And now have a chance to sweep all the division winners as the Chiefs are the AFC West division champions. This reminds me of back when Syracuse, it was Syracuse that just took out every Big 12 team.
Mm-hmm.
You remember that? They took out Texas, Oklahoma, and Kansas
to
win the
national
championship.
I think, too.
They might have. Yeah. I think you're right, early in the tournament. So sometimes you see this happen. They're on quite a run, a very impressive run, and Andy Reid knows that, certainly.
They've done a nice job. They've been underdogs in all those games, and they've played well. Good physical football on the road, and you know, we know that. We've looked at all of that, and but you know they've done it and done a very nice job.
They're strong. They're well coached. Mike does a nice job with them. That running back's not a bad player. He brings it every snap. He's a big fella that can really move. Got a good offensive line, good receivers. Quarterback's playing well. You always like those stories when a guy didn't have as much success as he probably would have liked at one place, but comes here and he's got the guys in the championship game. Their defense is playing good football. Well-deserved team to be in this position.
Yeah, the Titans have earned it. There's no doubt about it. But had they not beaten the Chiefs back in November, in Week 10, they wouldn't be here. So the Chiefs gave them a second lease on life. Both teams are so much better since they played back in November in Week 10 down at Tennessee, a game that the Titans won 35-32. We'll relive that game in a moment in case you forgot what happened. Patrick Mahomes, the reigning MVP, he won't be after the end of this year, but you know what? He might be the Super Bowl MVP. And I know that he'd rather have that MVP trophy than the regular season MVP that he had last year. And Mahomes, excited about the rematch.
It goes both ways. You get to see the defense, get to see what they're trying to take away, and then you try to combat that. And it can be stuff that you had success with, and then you want to go off of that, or if it can be stuff that you didn't have success with that you want to try to do better. And so, I mean, it's just every game's different. You know that they're going to have a different game plan, and you're going to go out there and try to execute as best as possible.
This Titan defense has played well, but they're not a juggernaut. Mahomes on the Titan D.
You want to make sure that you're just preparing for everything. You know that this is a good defense. They do a lot of different things, play a lot of man, play a lot of zone. And so you know that they're going to throw different coverages out there against you. And so just trying to prepare yourself for whatever their game plan is and trying to adjust as quickly as possible.
Certainly, it's pretty obvious. The focal point for the Chiefs defense will be Derrick Henry, who has just had a monster postseason. Led the league in rushing, almost 1,600 yards. 188 on the ground in New England, 195 last week against Baltimore. And Derrick Henry respects that Chiefs defense that has really improved.
I think they have a good blitz package. Actually, obviously, they have pass rushers. I think they're stout on the D-line. Linebackers are physical. Back end, they have experience. So they're a great all-around group.
All right, so how the Chiefs go about defending Derrick Henry? Because remember, it was Henry that ran all over the Chiefs a few years ago in the wild card playoff game. The Chiefs led 21-3, didn't score a point in the second half, and Tennessee just ran it right down the Chiefs' throat. And then they got that fluky touchdown pass on the deflected pass that Marcus Mariota threw to himself inadvertently for a touchdown, one of those fluky things that have happened over the years for the Chiefs. And then he ran all over the Chiefs in the second half in Tennessee on November the 10th. So what's the plan, Coach Spags?
All the mental things, it wouldn't matter who you're playing. You don't want to give anybody an extra 5 yards because you went offside or did something that you're not supposed to do. Look, he's a huge challenge. I can spit out all the tackling terms. I mean, our guys know what they are. It's going to be a mindset, and it's going to take all 11. It's not going to be one guy tackling. It's a swarm. It overpopulate the ball. We know he's going to get the ball a lot, so get a lot of people there.
Tyrann Mathieu said after the first meeting that tackling Henry is like tackling a rock. You just run into him, it's a rock. Well, what do you think is going to feel like a 20 degrees temperature coming up on Sunday? That concerns me a little bit. And speaking of Mathieu, Spagnuolo just loves his leadership.
I'm sure glad he's here. It makes my job a lot easier when you can rely on somebody like that. And there have been a number of times during the year where I've sat in my office and said, you know, I need to convey some message to these guys somehow, some way. And ultimately, what I normally do is I go to him and say, hey, look, can you steer him a little bit this way? And then usually it's, I got it, coach, and we roll. So it's good to have that.
Daniel Sorensen's in a role that really fits him better this year than last year, certainly. And he had two huge plays in that win over the Texans, the tackle in the open field on the fake punt, and then he dislodged the football on that kick return that resulted in a touchdown a few plays later. And Spags talks about Sorensen and what he's brought.
Yeah, he's important to us. He's important to Dave Tobe and what he does. He made some terrific plays last week that changed the flow of the game. He is as steady of a player that I've ever been around. I mean, every day he comes in, he works at it. He's the first guy out on the field. I don't know if you're all out there when we go out for practice, but always the first guy out, never misses. He loves what he does, and he's professional in everything that he does. I'm glad we got him.
You know how many snaps Daniel Sorensen played last week against the Texans? You want to take a guess how many snaps he played?
Oh, man. 40-some.
109.
Oh, wow.
Because he plays all the special teams, plus defense.
Goodness gracious.
Yeah. And he still had probably the two biggest plays of the game when you think about it. One on special teams and the other, technically, I guess, special teams, when he made the tackle on the fake punt.
Yeah.
Isn't that something? 109 plays. You wouldn't have thought that. I wouldn't have guessed that high either. The defense, it has a bit of a swag to it now. Chiefs have confidence. Spags talks about that swagger.
Well, I don't even know what a swagger is, to be honest with you. But they have it. He has it. You know, most of them do. Look, to me, it's a confidence thing, right? I mean, you can't play this game or be successful in this particular game unless you're a confident player. You got to believe in yourself, right? You got to be secure in yourself. And I don't know if that's his definition, but that's what I can see.
Swag. Yeah, there's swag. Mahomes has swag. Matthew has swag. Aaron Rodgers has swag. I like swag. Especially when it's successful for you.
Yeah.
Mike Vrabel, interesting cat. If you didn't hear on an interview, he said he was just trying to make it entertaining before the season, was willing to dismember himself and if they would win a Super Bowl. Said, he would get rid of the man's parts. And then his wife tweeted and said she was all for it. And he said, what's it matter? I've been married so many years.
Yeah.
And you can start to draw the lines wherever you want with that. But Vrabel's interesting cat. He will not do that if they do make the Super Bowl, win the Super Bowl. He's made that clear, which I think is probably a good move on his part. He talks about facing another elite quarterback, Tom Brady, Lamar Jackson, now Patrick Mahomes.
You know, Lamar has a certain skill set that is impressive, you know, but Patrick can, you know, he's not obviously as fast, but I mean, his ability to drift away from pass rush and you pressure him, and we pressured him here, and you know, you think a guy's free and he just drifts 5 yards and then throws a 15 yards in front of Hill and he runs underneath it, and it's pro football. You're playing the best players at their position, whether that's Deshaun or Patrick or Lamar last week.
So the Titans, they think they're ready. Mike Vrabel, admiration for Andy Reid. A lot of coaches across the league, if they're not still alive, are cheering for Andy to get his first Super Bowl.
Andy's been a head coach in this league for 21 years, and the league's a better place because Andy Reid and his family are in it. You know, and he's been a great mentor to me. Unbelievably smart and talented play caller. I think 13 of his 21 years, his offenses have been in the top 10 in scoring. They know how to score. He knows how to put points on the board. You can see his relationship with his players. They love him, and they play hard.
Travis Kelce will be a key component, and I'm sure the Titans will try to take him away, which I think will open up some things for Mecole Hardman, Sammy Watkins, and Tyreek Hill, because the Chiefs just have so many weapons. I'm sure the Chiefs are prepared for that as well. Kelce just won't be going up man-to-man coverage, I can tell you that. He'll see some zone. They'll bracket him. They'll double him. They'll beat him up at the line of scrimmage. They'll hold him. They'll hope they don't get called for penalties. They're going to be physical with Kelce, and it makes sense. And Kelce, 10 catches, 134 yards last week. The knee was bothering him a little bit. Then they were talking about a hamstring. Now nobody said anything about a hamstring this week, so I don't know if CBS had bad information or what last week. But that's good, because I'd rather have the knee that's just kind of a little bit sore than having a hammy, because that can go at any time. And Vrabel has a lot of praise for Kelce. 10 catches, 134, 3 touchdowns last week in a win over the Texans.
He's a very instinctive player. He's got a great relationship with the quarterback. He's physical down the field. He's hard to tackle. He got 136 targets or whatever it is, 97 catches. And so it's a difficult matchup. Got a lot of admiration for Travis and what he's done in his career. I mean, he grew up playing high school football in the state of Ohio. That's what you get.
All right, so here's the injury report for Sunday, which you can hear the game with noon pregame on Z96.3 at Lake, and then 2:05 kickoff, so a two-hour pregame, part of the Chiefs pregame and then part of the national pregame. And then Kevin Harlan will be on the call, former Chief, which is the perfect perfect guy, former Chiefs play-by-play announcer before Mitch Holthus. Perfect guy to have on the radio for our national coverage because we can't carry the local Chiefs broadcast because of NFL rules. And then we'll have a Chiefs post-game and hopefully a trophy presentation at 5:30 going about 7:30 coming up on Sunday. So we'll have about 7.5 hours of Chiefs coverage on Sunday for the Chiefs versus the Tennessee Titans. The injury report, Chris Jones did not practice, hasn't practiced. Listen, he's not going to play. He has a calf injury. Those take a while to heal. Even if the Chiefs make the Super Bowl, I'm not convinced he'll be able to play much, even in that. And Saran Petra, 10WHP in Kansas City, was with us, and he said he still thinks it has to do with playing basketball in the locker room that caused that injury. He said Jones went down in the locker room while they're in there.
Mm-hmm.
And they got up, and he thought everything was okay, but he still thinks that contributed to it. Doesn't know it for sure. If you missed that interview, it's posted on our podcast center there at Sports Ticket on KDCountry94.com. LeSean McCoy and Matt Moore did not practice due to illness. McCoy hardly played last week anyway, but if Williams gets nicked up, that's the next guy you're going to go to is McCoy, because I'm sure the Chiefs probably don't want to put a lot of pressure or put Darwin Thompson in a tough spot there.
No.
Playoff football is different. Travis Kelce, limited participant in practice with the knee. Kalen Saunders, a knee, but full participant. Morris Claiborne, shoulder, full participant. He's been out the last few weeks, so that would give him a little more depth. Kendall Fuller, who's playing more of a safety position with Thornhill out with the torn ACL, a knee, but full participant. Tino Pasanow, neck, full participant. Austin Ryder, a wrist, but he was good to go. Andrew Wiley, ankle, he's good to go. So Wiley might be back on that offensive line for the Chiefs. As for Tennessee, Jayon Brown, a linebacker, shoulder, limited participant. Adam Humphries, wide receiver, he's missed the last few weeks, and they might get him back, and that will help Tennessee's offense. He's a possession receiver that hurt the Chiefs the first time around, so I'm hoping that ankle isn't so great for him. Limited practice participant. Adoree Jackson, corner, limited practice with a foot. That's a big thing if he has some problems with that foot. But it doesn't look like anybody of big note is going to be out for Tennessee, whereas the Chiefs, the big name, of course, is Chris Jones. Chris Jones played in the Tennessee game week 10. Tennessee ran all over the Chiefs. I honestly don't know if Chris Jones helps against the run. I really don't. I think he obviously helps in the pass rush because he can take away the pocket.
Bull rushes everybody, right, and they can't contain.
But Kalen Saunders, Derek Nnadi, and others have done a decent job against the run. I think the Chiefs are okay without Chris Jones against the run. Where you'd really like to have him is a pass rush to where you have those ends, Clark and Pasanow, on the edge, and then the quarterback can't step up, and then those edge rushers can get to him, or Jones will take him. That's where I think you really miss Chris Jones. All right, so let's go back, because I remember this game about as clearly as any other game during the season, because it was a game the Chiefs flat out just let slip away. The Chiefs were in Tennessee on November the 10th, week 10. It was the first week back for Patrick Mahomes after missing two games. The Chiefs had just beaten the Minnesota Vikings, feeling pretty good about that win with Matt Moore quarterback. Chiefs go into Tennessee. It jumped out early, 10-0. Then it was 10-7. They lost the game 35-32. That was the last loss for the Chiefs. They won seven in a row since then. Think about this for a second. And I remember watching the game wishing Andy Reid was more aggressive. And I hope it's different this Sunday. But in that game against Tennessee, part of the reason Chiefs lost was, yes, the defense didn't do its job, but the offense had chances to put the game away and didn't do it. The Chiefs had 4th-and-2 at the Titan 12. Andy took the field goal. 4th-and-3 at the 23 of Tennessee, took the field goal. 4th-and-2 at the Tennessee 25, took a field goal. So you had 2 4th-and-2s and a 4th-and-3 inside the Tennessee 25, and Andy Reid took the easy points and didn't let his quarterback do something special. I hope that changes on Sunday if that's the situation the Chiefs are in, because I don't want to see him go by the book and then lose this game because you're preventing your quarterback from making a play. This should be all bar, everything just let loose. Like they did when they're down 24-0, one of the great things about being down 24-0, sounds crazy to say, was the Chiefs could just let it fly. Let loose. Play a little relaxed because you're down, not supposed to come back. Mahomes, let it fly. The play calling was wide open. So I've heard people say, well, you gotta get a two-score lead on the Titans. You can put them away. I don't know. Chiefs get kind of conservative sometimes that way, and that's still concerning.
A three-score lead on the Titans last time they played them, and they didn't put it away.
That's right. Chiefs are up 32.
In the playoffs is what I'm saying.
Right.
Yeah.
The Chiefs are up 32-27 in Week 10. They had all kinds of chances to end that game. Also keep in mind, the Chiefs were up 10-7 and were driving at midfield when Damian Williams fumbled. It was returned for a touchdown by the Titans. That changed the whole game. In the final 90 seconds, the Chiefs squandered a 32-27 lead. They botched a field goal attempt, and that was after they had a third and two, and they had one option in the passing game, and that was Mahomes rolling right, who was coming off the dislocated kneecap his first game back, and the only option in the pass route was Blake Bell. And then Mahomes threw the ball away, so he didn't – actually, no, he took a loss instead of throwing away because he wanted to keep the clock running and make Tennessee burn a timeout, which they did. So then the Chiefs were settling for a long field goal, and then some people say there was a whistle from the stands. Who knows? But the ball was snapped, and the holder, Colquitt, wasn't ready. Chiefs didn't even get off a field goal attempt. They botched it. So they could have been up 35-27, up eight. Instead, it didn't happen. The Titans then went down and scored a touchdown, got the two on top of it all, 35-32. Mahomes, with about 30 seconds to go, right down the field, got in field goal range for about a 52-yarder that Butker certainly can make. But Butker missed an extra point earlier in that game, if you remember, and he had the field goal blocked as the Titans knew the cadence, knew the timing, jumped it, weren't off sides, was close, but wasn't, blocked it, and the Chiefs didn't even get to kick the field goal to tie the ball game. It was blocked. The Chiefs had 9 penalties for 80 yards in the game. Now, for the Titans' defense, I hear that the defense of the Titans is good. I disagree. The Brady and the Patriots' offense was not good at all. The Ravens' offense had 500 yards. The problem was they settled for field goals, and they got stopped on 2 fourth-and-ones. If they don't get stopped on those 2 fourth-and-ones, it's a whole different game. Ifs, ands, and buts. Tennessee did the job when they had to. So Tennessee bends a lot, but they've been pretty good at not breaking. They're going to be pushed to the limit against the Chiefs offense this week. The Chiefs put up 530 yards of offense and had the ball for 38 minutes against Tennessee. That's the good news. The bad news is they settled for field goals. They had the fumble return for a touchdown. But also the bad news is that the Chiefs defense, and I ripped the defense, you remember that following morning, because the Chiefs defense, somebody said, well, they were gassed in the fourth quarter. How can you be gassed when you only played one-third of the game? They played 22 minutes, the defense, and still gave up 8.7 yards a carry. And Ryan Tannehill killed him with a couple of big scrambles and one when they had him tackled and couldn't bring him down, and he went for a first down on a third and long. I don't think those same things are going to happen this Sunday and the game's at Arrowhead, which you sit here and say, well, it's at Arrowhead. What a big advantage. The Chiefs are 2-7. In their last 9 games at Arrowhead. The only 2 wins, Indy last year at home and last week with Houston. But the key is Patrick Mahomes is 2-1.
Yeah.
Forget all the other stuff before Mahomes era. So this will be – listen, the Titans needed turnovers from the Ravens. They needed them to get stopped on 4th-and-1. The Chiefs, I would hope to goodness, and Soren Petro mentioned this the other day, it's 3rd-and-inches, 4th-and-inches. Please, please, don't just run the ball and show that you're going to run the ball with Damian Williams. I know people get nervous if Mahomes does a quarterback sneak, but if you got to do it, you got to do it. But I would love to just see Mahomes have the ball in his hands one way or the other on a 3rd-and-short, knowing you're going to go for it on a 4th-down. And that's a thing sometimes I don't know if Andy has figured out. It's 3rd-and-2. Make the 3rd-down call knowing that if you don't get it, you're going for it on 4th. And I think sometimes he waits till it's 4th-down and then is like, okay, do I take the field goal or do I go for it? And that's indecisiveness. That concerns me a little bit. Here's an interesting nugget. The 2019 and 2020 Chiefs. The Chiefs are the 11th team since the merger to host at least 2 consecutive conference title games. Last year against New England, this year against Tennessee. Only one team has failed to make the Super Bowl when accomplishing this in a 2-year stretch. You know who that team is?
Oh, man.
Think about it. Ties in with what we got.
The Tennessee?
Andy Reid.
Andy Reid, Philadelphia, yeah.
3 straight conference title games.
I was thinking in the AFC was where my mind was at. Yeah,
Titans have gone back-to-backs.
Yeah.
Andy Reid. 2002 and 03 Eagles, they lost the championship game both years. That's the only one out of those 11 teams not to at least get the Super Bowl once, having 2 chances at it. Now, the good news is, the 3rd year in a row, Andy Reid made it to the Super Bowl. Well, let's not put this off to next year for the Chiefs. Please don't.
No.
Please don't.
Please no.
Please don't. Okay, so it's time for our predictions here. By the way, Andy Reid doesn't have a lot of success against Tennessee. He's like 1-7, 1-8. It's not good.
Yeah.
Fluky stuff.
With Philadelphia and Kansas City combined.
Fluky stuff have happened.
It is. That's the weird thing about it.
I think the fluky stuff hopefully is out of the system. Here's the thing. As long as nothing bad happens where Mahomes or Kelsey or Matthew gets hurt, I think the Chiefs win this game. The Titans needed everything to go their way. Yeah. The Chiefs had to flat out make mistake after mistake, the fumble return for a touchdown, settling for field goals on 4th-and-short, not punching it in, not closing it when they had it. The defense got a stop late in that game, and that's when they didn't convert. They had, I think it was second and three, and then it was third and two, and then they, and Mahomes had only one option, and then took a four-yard loss, and then they botched the field goal, and then they give up the touchdown and horrible defense, and then they come right down, and then they have the field goal blocked. I mean, it was a complete, I don't want to say choke job, but it was a complete collapse of epic proportions. And I must say, the Chiefs' first quarter against Houston will look like to be an epic collapse of historic proportions as well. But they recovered from that. They cannot play anything like they played in the first quarter the other day, or they are in deep, deep trouble this Sunday. And I don't think they will. I think they hopefully got that out of their system. So, I think the Chiefs are going to win. And before the playoffs, I had the Chiefs and the 49ers in the Super Bowl. Before the playoffs, before the year, I had the Cowboys and Chiefs, and that was, I'm an idiot, because the Cowboys, I bought into all the talent they had, and I should have known with Jason Garrett that would never happen. So shame on me. But I'm sticking with the Chiefs, and the Niners are the best team in football all year long, in my opinion, and I've watched a lot of football. We'll talk about the Packers and the Niners in a moment. But I'm taking the Chiefs to win this game, and I'll tell you what, I think that that coin flip is so big, and if the Chiefs get the toss, I hope they take the ball. But maybe they won't. Maybe the perfect scenario is defer and you stop Tennessee, you get the ball, you score. Now you have a one-score lead and you're going to get the ball to start the second half. That might be the perfect scenario. I have this weird feeling, and I hope I'm right, that the Chiefs' defense is going to hold Henry in check. He's still going to get 100 yards. I don't think there's any doubt he's going to get 100 yards.
Yeah.
But as long as he doesn't go for 200 or more, that sounds weird to say. I mean, think about it. He ran for 188. They only scored 14 points on offense. So you can give Henry yards and still win. You can still hold him to a low point total if he gets a lot of yards because you could hold him to field goals. And I think this Chiefs defense can do it. I think Tannehill is going to make a mistake in this game that could be big. I think the Chiefs are very upset thinking back to that game, how they should have never lost it. I think the Chiefs know that, hey, we dodged a big bullet last week down 24-0. And I also believe that their defense is so much better than it was back in Week 10, and they're going to have all kinds of different looks, and Spags got some tricks in his bag yet, I would imagine. And the other thing I keep pointing to and I keep coming back to is Patrick Mahomes is a lot healthier now than he was then. And then at Tennessee, when he wasn't 100% healthy, which I don't know if he is quite yet either, but back then I bet he was 75 to 80%. He threw for 446 yards, 3 touchdowns, no interceptions. I don't think the Titans can stop the Chiefs offense. I just don't. And even the only way they can stop it is Henry carries the ball 40 times, probably 30 to 40, and they just limit the possessions. But even then, I don't know if the Titans can score enough points against the improved Chiefs defense. I just think the Chiefs have too much firepower. This is the perfect example of people that love running teams. Coaches that love this, you know, Coach Koenig, he loves to run the football. I've seen him post some things about you still got to run the football to win championships. But here's what's going to happen. If the Titans win the game and Derrick Henry has a big game, then all the people that are all about smash mouth football, old school football coaches, are going to be all over social media saying, told you, told you, told you. And they'd probably be right. But if the Chiefs go out and win the game throwing the ball 45 times and run the ball 12, those coaches, they'll be crickets. They won't make any posts whatsoever.
Yeah.
Like Sermon Petros said the other day on the show, he says, listen, Chiefs don't have to run the ball. They don't have to be balanced. He said, and some of the passes end up being runs with Mahomes scrambling like we saw the other day. He goes, I think the Chiefs run the ball too much is what he said. On third and one, fourth and one, why are we running the ball? We're a pass team. We've got a great quarterback who makes great decisions, who went through 5 interceptions all year long. You use that as a strength. There's no shame in saying, hey, we don't try to run the ball that much because we don't need to. We got a screen pass that simulates a run. We have a swing pass. We've got the short passing game to Kelce. Ooh, you want to jump our short passing game? Well, now we got Hardman and Hill streaking down the field. And by the way, Sammy Watkins has been totally non-existent in this offense for weeks. Who knows what happens? Maybe they're going to double Hill and somehow try to double Kelce. Well, that means you got Watkins and Hardman. If they're both on the field at the same time, three wide receiver set and Kelce, that's a lot of speed on the field. How are you going to cover everybody? So then it comes down to, can Tennessee get a pass rush? Well, let me add this to the equation. Eric Fisher did not play Week 10 against Tennessee. The Chiefs, with Eric Fisher playing a full game, they're 8-0. Without Eric Fisher, they're 5-4. Without Eric Fisher, they average 27 points a game. With Eric Fisher, 32 points a game. When Eric Fisher does not play, the Chiefs' offensive line allows 2 sacks per game. When he plays, the Chiefs allow 0.8 sacks a game. You don't think that's pretty important numbers right there? It shows that the Chiefs are much better. Eric Fisher, left tackle, obviously, and Cam Irving. Some people would say, duh. Yeah. But the stats pointed out. Guess who was the left tackle for the Chiefs at Tennessee? Cam Irving. Remember that game? Mitchell Schwartz had to sit out a few plays. He got hurt. Martinez Rankin blew out his knee, broke his leg. He was out. The Chiefs were short two offensive linemen in that game. People forget that as well. And an immobile Patrick Mahomes. They were protecting him. And they still gave up 32 points and 530 yards to Chiefs offense. I don't think the Titans have the answers. And that's why I'm picking the Chiefs to win. And I'm picking the Chiefs to win by double digits.
Yeah, it's all predicated on that first drive.
If don't you get turn the ball over.
Or if you make the stop. You know, I feel like you said, really the open of this game might be one of the most important opening drives for the Chiefs, no matter if it's offense or defense.
Yes,
okay,
I agree.
So no matter what happens, they've got to come out and set the tone, no matter which side of the ball they're on. And if they do that, I feel real confident that they're going to get the win this weekend. And you talk about even Derrick Henry, you know, he ran for 188 last time against the Chiefs, over 8 yards a carry, and they should have won.
Yes.
So we worry so much about Derrick Henry.
They're a third down conversion of having that game won.
Yeah, we worry so much about him because he's had a lot of success in his first five or six playoff games, whatever it is.
Right.
And also because he's run for 188 yards, over 8 yards a carry last time against the Chiefs, he's the one that had the closer in the last playoff game the Chiefs played against the Titans.
Right.
That big long run that just dashed any hopes of doing anything. And, you know, that guy's ingrained in your mind. But when you think about it, Derrick Henry had really nothing to do with the wins for the Titans. He did. Well, what I'm saying is it wasn't because of Derrick Henry that they won these games the last two times the Chiefs and Titans have played.
It was because
he helps, clearly. It was because of fluke stuff happening in the games and your defense giving up and you know, Andy Reid being conservative one game and, you know, Marcus Mariota catching a pass. We've talked all about it. It's those kind of things. It's not just Derrick Henry.
Travis Kelce had a concussion. Exactly. Chris Jones left the first half after dominating that game in the playoffs against Tennessee at Arrowhead with Alex Smith, the quarterback. Once you lost Kelce, couldn't do anything offensively. And then the running game got going for Tennessee and the defense on the field forever because the Chiefs couldn't do anything offensively. Kelce getting a concussion that game was gigantic at the time. And then, of course, Chris Jones losing him for the rest of the game. Those two big studs are gone. They're better now to deal with Chris Jones getting hurt.
Yeah.
And so that was fluky. You mentioned the batted pass that was caught by Mariota for a touchdown. That was fluky. Also fluky is, you know, snapping the ball, thinking you heard a whistle, and you don't get off a field goal to go up eight.
Yeah.
You know, also fluky is, you know, then having a field goal blocked, not even getting it off. The final play of the game, it's also fluky to have a fumble at the 50 return for a touchdown. That doesn't happen very often. It does seem like the Titans have had all the luck when it comes to these games. Let's hope it does not continue coming up this Sunday.
Yeah, and so my point is that don't just, like, sit here and be scared because of Derrick Henry. And
no,
that's the only
be scared
reason.
Of so the karma.
Be scared of, exactly, karma. And hopefully we saw last week that has changed for the Chiefs, and hopefully they get that to continue to keep going in their direction coming up on Sunday. I think they will, too. I'm picking the Chiefs to win probably something like, you know, a 31-24. Maybe the Titans get a late score or something. I really feel confident about
I got 35-20 Chiefs. Yeah. 35-20. I think Chiefs can score more than that. And if they get up early, then Tennessee eventually is going to have to throw the ball a little bit. They can't do the play action. See, they rely on play action. So if they get down two scores, now maybe I think Vrabel will stick with the running game. But the Chiefs can really negate that running game. Now you make Tannehill pass in obvious passing situations, I think the Titans are in trouble. I just don't see how the Titans are going to slow down this offense. I really don't. Unless the Chiefs drop the ball left and right like they did and fumble the ball.
Start of the game, they're not catching it.
Muff punt.
Yeah.
Drop a touchdown right in the hands of Mecole Hardman for 80 yards and he drops it, something like that. All right, so we've gotten the Chiefs in the Super Bowl. The NFC Championship game, it's the Packers and 49ers. That's Sunday at 5:40 on Fox. And, folks, this is an interesting situation. Well, Mike LaFleur is the passing game coordinator for the Niners. His brother is the head coach of the Packers, Matt LaFleur. So the LaFleur family is going to be happy and sad all at the same time, no matter what happens coming up this Sunday. And Matt LaFleur, the head coach of the Green Bay Packers, has a lot of respect for that 49er defense.
It's hard to get those explosive plays. And so in order to string together drives, you've got to convert on third down. And this is, I think they were ranked number two in the National Football League on third down. I mean, this is as good as defense as there is out there. And really, they were missing a lot of key players. Now they are fully back. They got everybody. So it's going to be a great challenge for us.
It will be interesting because the Niners kicked the you-know-what out of the Packers 37-8 on November 24th out in San Francisco. The Niners' defense was just suffocating. Aaron Rodgers couldn't do anything. And Kyle Shanahan, happy to play with a great defense.
Our team has played like a top defense, so that's been great. I know we did go through, you know, these last six games. It hasn't, at the end of the year, it was a little different than that, where we had to do some games throwing the ball and things like that. But noticed that earlier in the year, based off how those guys play, it does affect your play calling. But that's stuff you get a feel for during the game.
Just remember, San Francisco 49er fans, you could have had Aaron Rodgers in the 2005 draft, and you better hope that this comment doesn't come back to bite you.
How disappointed are you that you will not be a 49er?
Not as disappointed as the 49ers will be that they didn't draft me.
All right, there you go. Salvo fired 15 years ago. NFC title game, it is the Packers and the Niners. I see a lot of people picking the Packers to win this game. I don't see it. I really don't. I've watched the Niners a lot this year. The Packers don't super impress me. It is at San Francisco. It's a road game for Green Bay. The 49ers are at home. I know the quarterback position. It's advantage Rodgers versus Garoppolo. But let's be honest, Rodgers didn't have a great year. But he played really well against Seattle last week. So maybe he's elevating his play. He is 35. The Niners got a great pass rush. Dee Ford's now healthy. And you put Dee Ford back in there, they're a much better defense. Nick Bosa is a stud. They got one of their key linebackers back last week from injury. The Niners are finally healthy. And when they were healthy this year defensively, they were one of the best defenses in the league. Then they had problems the last 5 or 6 weeks because they had injuries to Dee Ford and Quan Alexander and others. Now those guys are healthy. They're back. And you saw what they did to the Vikings. Held them 140 yards of offense, and they had a good running game. The Packers were blown out 37-8. I just think the 49ers are going to run the ball. They're going to be effective running it. Garoppolo's not going to make a lot of mistakes. He might make one. And I think it's going to take Aaron Rodgers to play his best game of the season for the Packers to beat the Niners. And that's certainly possible. I will say this. I don't think the Niners are going to roll them like they did the first time. But I do think the Niners are going to win this game. And I think a lot of people, once again, are just caught up in the Aaron Rodgers thing. Well, yeah, who's the better quarterback? Probably Rodgers. But it's more than quarterbacks. You still got to have the team around you. And I think the Niners are the most complete team in the National Football League and been the best team all year long, quite honestly. I thought they were better than the Ravens, and they lost on a last-second field goal to the Ravens in Baltimore. All their losses on a last-second play of the year, of the game, every game of the year, their three losses, so they could easily be 16-0. And they looked dominant last week, and they're at home. The only question mark is that Garoppolo makes some boneheaded mistakes. But otherwise, I think the Niners are the team to beat here.
Yeah, if you're the 49ers, you just don't let Jimmy G decide it for you.
Yes.
Don't make it be his game.
True.
Just let him be the quarterback that he's been throughout the year, and you know, let your running game and defense win that for you. That's the formula
point.
For him.
Excellent point.
I don't think it's going to be 37-8 like last time, but I am going to pick the 49ers to win just based on what we've seen throughout the year. Probably like 10-point win for the 49ers, I'll say.
Think about it. If the Chiefs versus Niners, it's the Chiefs against Dee Ford, who kept them from making a Super Bowl, who can now keep them from winning a Super Bowl.
What if Dee Ford jumps off sides for the 49ers
in the fourth quarter and the Chiefs win?
The Packers. This weekend, and the Packers end up winning. That curse follows them to
I'm thinking
San
the
Francisco.
Super Bowl, Niners and Chiefs, and they jump off sides.
Or that,
It's 3rd and 4, and the Chiefs are trying to close it out, and Dee Ford jumps off sides, and the Chiefs get it, and they take a knee and win the Super Bowl in Miami. That'd be all right.
Yeah.
I'm cool with that. That's an interesting subplot for Chiefs fans, but the bigger subplot for the nation would be Rodgers versus Mahomes, which I'd love to see as well. Packers versus Chiefs. And I do think the Chiefs have a better chance of beating the Packers than the Niners because I think the Niners are the more complete team, which sounds crazy because Rodgers versus Garoppolo, who would you take? But the Chiefs, you know, they nearly beat the Packers the first time this year, and Mahomes didn't even play. So, but Rodgers is so smart, and he can make adjustments, and that can concern you. But I'd love to see Mahomes and Rodgers play each other. The battle of the State Farm actors. I think it'd be great because we didn't see it. We were robbed of it because of Mahomes dislocated kneecap earlier this year on a Monday night. So it'd be fun. I'm hoping for whichever way. I'm cool. I really don't care who wins the NFC title game as long as the Chiefs win the AFC title game.
Yeah.
Now, what happens if the Chiefs lose to the Titans? No, you're not even going to care who wins the second game.
No.
As a Chiefs fan, right?
I probably won't even watch much of it because I'll be too depressed.
So mad and depressed. Yeah. I agree. All right, staying with football, LSU defensive coordinator Dave Aranda has been named the new head coach of Baylor. That seems like a pretty solid hire for Baylor, replacing Matt Rhule, who went to Carolina and gets $70 million to coach in the NFL. Who could turn that down? His defense held Clemson quarterback Trevor Lawrence to 18 of 37 passing, although I will say Lawrence missed a lot of throws they normally would make. So that's a pretty good hire. He's only 43. He received his master's degree at Texas Tech. He was a grad assistant at Texas Tech. He was a linebackers coach for 2 years in Houston. He knows the state a little bit. So I think that's a pretty good hire for Baylor. The other news out of the NFL is Odell Beckham Jr. There's a warrant for his arrest for slapping the butt of a security guard who came into the locker room after LSU was celebrating their win over Clemson. Here's my thing. Why let anybody that isn't a player on the team even in the locker room? Why do we need all the alums to come in? They're not part of the team. I know they're part of the program, but they're not part of that team. Mm-hmm. I think it was over the top. The cigar smoking, I thought, was, hey, whatever. It's legal. You can do it. But, you know, security, you got to have respect for authority. I don't think it's that big a deal. I think it's being made a bigger deal than it should be. But Odell Beckham Jr. Handed out money. Joe Burrow's even said it in a podcast that, yeah, I'm not a student athlete anymore. Yeah, he gave us cash after the game. And people are up in arms about that. First of all, I don't have a big problem with it because, you know what? You know that Ed Orgeron just got a huge bonus and Dabo Sweeney got a huge bonus for making it to the national title game. There's plenty of money to go around. But here's the problem I have with it. You're putting these young guys are going to try to come back and play next year that aren't jumping to the pros like Joe Burrow because he's a senior anyway. You're putting them in harm's way about eligibility by handing them cash in a locker room. That doesn't do your program any good.
No.
And so Odell Beckham Jr. is taken away from that great win by being a distraction because he made himself bigger than what it was, partying and everything else, handing out money and then slapping the backside of a security guard. And that's Odell Beckham Jr. being all about, say it with me, himself.
Yes.
And that's why they haven't won anything of any magnitude, even when he was in college and in the pros. He is a problem. Great talent. He's a problem. And he didn't help there. All right, more. Drew Rosenhaus. Speaking of guys that are got issues, Antonio Brown. Now he's lost his agent. Drew Rosenhaus says, "That's it. I'm done." Antonio Brown. This guy's something's wrong upstairs. I don't know if it's CTE or whatever it is. Who knows? He's taking performance enhancing drugs, steroids. He has some anger issues. He got into a deal at a youth league that he donated money to. The youth league gave the money back, a football youth league in Florida. Saying he cussed at everybody, this and that, and the parents and that security and whatever else, and I don't know why. And he posted it on video. Antonio Brown posted it. It wasn't very flattering, so why did he post it? I have no idea. TMZ got a hold of it. Anyway, Antonio Brown probably won't play in the NFL ever again, and I don't know why he sabotaged his career, but something's not right in his head, obviously. Yeah. And Drew Rosenhaus finally had I think he realizes this might be the last straw. So that's that. More info and fallout from the Major League Baseball cheating scandal. This is crazy stuff. Carlos Beltran stepped down after being implicated in Astros sign-stealing scandal. He was a player on the Astros back in 17 when they won the World Series, and now the investigation on Major League Baseball has shown that the Astros did cheat, and we've been through that already. So now what you've had is A.J. Hinch was suspended, then he was fired. Astros need a new manager. Alex Cora was a bench coach for the Astros in 17. He was a manager of the Red Sox in 18, and the Red Sox are being investigated right now for cheating as well. And Cora and the Red Sox parted ways. So the Red Sox need a manager. And now the Mets, Carlos Beltran might be the first guy to quit as a manager before ever coaching a Major League Baseball game. And it was his first head coaching job. And, you know, I was a big proponent of Beltran being the next Royals manager. I'm glad he's not now.
Yeah.
And I think it's unfortunate because I think Carlos Beltran's a good person. But he got caught up in this because he wanted to win a World Series. Because he had never won a World Series, if I remember correctly. Because the Astros, he had that great run with them, but they didn't win the World Series.
Lost to the White Sox.
Right. So
back
I think it was
in the National League.
Right. So I think it was all in to win a World Series. And I here's the thing that is unfortunate to me about Carlos Beltran. I think this kills any chances for him to make it into the Hall of Fame as a player. Because he's borderline. Mm-hmm. I think this kills it. And it's unfortunate. But he made his own bed. He's got a lie in it.
Yeah.
And now the reports, so the Mets need a manager, the Red Sox need a manager, and the Astros. Those are three pretty big media markets, aren't they?
Yeah.
And we're less than a month away from spring training, and three of those franchises, 10% of the Major League Baseball, 10%, three of their 30 teams don't even have a manager right now because of the scandal.
Yeah.
Isn't that crazy?
That's.
And it all started because Mike Fiers blew the whistle. Now Jessica Mendoza, who works for the Mets as a consultant, who is on ESPN, representing Major League Baseball, says that Mike Fiers should have kept it private, could have voiced his concerns since he's with the A's, tell his teammates, yeah, the Astros cheat, be ready for the garbage can, but he shouldn't have blown the whistle on the Astros because he benefited from winning a World Series as a player himself. I find that somewhat hypocritical.
Oh, there's no doubt it's hypocritical.
Because she knows that Beltran was going to step down probably, and it's like, no, we got our manager, we're all happy with him. Now he's going to step down because of the scandal, but if Fiers would have been quiet, we wouldn't have to deal with this right now as a Met. And I like Jesse Mendoza, but I don't agree with the comments.
No.
Something that big, somebody's got to eventually leak it out. Somebody's got to blow the whistle on it.
She's probably not the first thing, the first person to think that way.
No.
But you, it's, you know, whatever your morals are, I guess.
Mike Fears is a snitch.
But he wasn't going to do it when he played, you know.
Yeah, he didn't do it when he was playing and said it was wrong.
I agree with the fact that he did benefit from from the scheme, I guess. But but at the same time, I'm not going to sit here and just blame him for coming out and talking about it.
Now, the latest news is Major League Baseball explored wearable devices during the investigation. They found no evidence to substantiate it, but they're, remember when Jose Altuve hit that home run over Aroldis Chapman and they were going to rip the jersey off? He said, no, not the jersey, which is pretty weird. I remember thinking that's kind of different, but whatever. And he said his wife would kill him if his shirt was ripped off. There was a tweet put out there by somebody claiming to be a niece of, I think, Jose Altuve, was it? And said, I can't hold out any longer. Bregman and Altuve were wearing buzzable devices to where somebody from center field at home games would buzz them because they saw the sign from the catcher, and they hit something, and it would buzz them to let them know that here comes the off-speed pitch. And it was off-speed pitch that Chapman threw, and Altuve hit into the sky in that one Game 7 in the ALCS over the Yankees. Now, of course, Clover's a big Yankee fan, and he sit here, and he's all mad about it. But at the time, he wasn't all mad about it because I remember him saying, I don't know why you don't throw your best pitch. And I knew he was coming with a breaking ball. Well, I did too. Watching the game, I knew it was coming. So did they cheat to find out it was off-speed pitch? Maybe. You still have to hit the ball. You don't know the location of the pitch. But I'm not condoning the cheating. But listen, I even knew that the off-speed pitch was coming. But Chapman's relying on it too much. So whether if he didn't cheat, it's not to think that he couldn't have guessed right or knew that it was a curveball or a changeup coming. But if he's going to have a device that's letting him know what happened about earlier in the game, I'm not really worried about that home run by Altuve that beat Chapman and the Yankees as much, because I think everybody knew changeup was coming because he was throwing it too much.
Mm-hmm.
But what about the first 8 innings of that game or that series?
Yeah.
All the home games, Bregman and Altuve, two of their best hitters. If they were, and these are just rumors, but if they were wearing a buzzable device on their shoulder, their right shoulder, as it's been reported possibly, that tipped them off every single time they're at the plate on every single pitch. That is an advantage, without question.
Yeah,
the Astros took this thing to as far as you could possibly take it. And if Mike Fears never said nothing, nobody would have gotten in trouble. Another black eye for baseball.
Do they pass this info along and say, hey, we got away with it, keep it to yourself, but you can do this now too, you know?
Yeah.
To the other places they go, like the Mets or the Red Sox now, you see with Cora. And
Yeah,
it's interesting.
It really is. It's a black eye for baseball, but my question, do the fans overall care?
I don't think so.
I don't think so. Just like they didn't care about all the PEDs.
It's like everything you see, like when teams have to vacate Final Fours in college basketball and championships in football, like USC.
And
they still got it. It still happened. I saw it with my own eyes. Whatever. They cheated. Move on from them.
Yeah.
Get rid of the people that did it. Let's keep playing ball.
I don't like people cheating. And I don't like when the message sends to young people. And the integrity of the game is certainly tarnished. But at the same time, the integrity of the game was blown up way back before this even happened.
Yeah.
It's a black eye on
steroids
baseball.
Steroids is a bigger black eye than this will ever be.
I agree. And fans didn't care then. I don't think they care that much now. The fans that care are the ones that were victimized by being a team that lost to the Astros in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Those are the fans that care.
And
the other
Red
ones?
Sox, if you're the Dodgers, doing it twice, 2 years
right.
in a row, you lost
That's true.
To the teams that cheated.
Good point. Good point. I hadn't thought about that. Dodgers should be madder than anybody.
Yeah.
Bill Self and the Jayhawks may or may not have Devon Dotson coming up tomorrow. A tip-off 1 o'clock against Texas. Texas is 12-4, 2-2 in the Big 12. KU 13-3, 3-1, ranked 6th in the country. Here's Bill Self on Dotson's status.
I know he's making progress, and, you know, we didn't practice yesterday, and he got treatment, and then we'll see him when he's out there. I'm sure that he'll try to practice, but I don't know yet what to what extent. But people make too big a deal out of this. We're not going to change our strategy a lot, whether he does or does not. This is who we are, and you know, it's different than football. You play one game a week, and you only play 12. Well, here there's a lot of things. So if he's day to day, you know, I'm not going to change how we play totally for this one game, knowing we're going to go right back the way it is. And then we don't even know if he'll play or not. So we would enjoy having him with us regardless of when he lets us know, but sooner is definitely better than later.
I think Kansas can win at Texas without Devon Dotson.
Mm.
But the thing is Isaiah Moss going to play that well back-to-back games? He's been up and down. KU at Texas. You can hear it on Z96.3 Lake tomorrow pregame at 12:30, tip time at 1 o'clock. K-State will try to get their first Big 12 win of the year. Won't be easy. They host number 12 West Virginia, who's 14-2. That's at 1 o'clock tomorrow. You can watch on ESPNU. Hey, it's not on ESPN+, so every K-State fan can quit whining about that. I'm so tired of hearing about it. I really am. Not just K-State fans, but everybody in general about ESPN+. You know what? If you hate it so much, then just don't pay the $5 and be done with it. It's your call, your decision. Right? You have the right to that. I get it. But for crying out loud, make a mountain out of a molehill a little bit, I think. But I know you don't want to spend any more on top of your cable bill, your DirecTV bill, your Dish to your satellite bill. I do get it. I do. But at the same time, if you're going to prevent yourself from watching your team play and $5 is going to stop you from doing that, well, then that's your choice. But it's not going
to
stop me.
I'll listen to the people that can't get rural internet, but not people that just don't want to pay the money.
I agree with you. I agree with you. Bruce Weber on West Virginia.
I know he's making progress.
Whoops, sorry, that's Bill Self. There's Bruce Weber.
Really playing well. They Huggs has got them playing very physical, very aggressively. They got big guys inside that, you know, and their defensive numbers, especially in the league, they're good, you know, totally. But I think they're the best in the country at three-point defense. Percentage defense, and they're one of the better field goal and holding opponents' points down. And in the league, it's even unbelievable what they've done. And, you know, they're just grinding you out and being very physical.
Hard to find a way that K-State wins this game, but you never know. It could be a grinded-out, low-scoring game, and that gives K-State a chance. Both teams could really struggle on offense in this one. Also in the Big 12, number 2 Baylor's Oklahoma State tomorrow at 11 a.m. TCU at Oklahoma at 1 p.m. and Iowa State at number 23 Texas Tech at 3 p.m. The Shockers in action. They'll try to bounce back. They'll host Houston. Houston, Wichita State tied a 4-way tie atop the American Athletic Conference at 3-1. Shockers 15-2, ranked 16th in the country. Had their 9-game winning streak snapped the other day to Temple, and that'll be on ESPN2 at 3 o'clock tomorrow. And former Jayhawk Quentin Grimes plays for Houston, averaging 13 points a game, but just shooting 30%. From 3. News for K-State, Sean Snyder, son of Bill Snyder, had a lengthy interview in Austin on Thursday for the Texas's vacant tight end coach special teams coordinator position. According to sources, unclear if he's a top candidate. Safe to say Tom Herman will do his due diligence and decide who he wants to hire, but Sean Snyder could be a member of the Texas coaching staff.
I've heard something about Nebraska maybe wanting him as their special teams coordinator too.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. Conor McGregor is going to be back in the octagon. He's going to take on Cowboy Cerrone. You going to pay to watch that one?
No?
Okay. It'll be interesting. I'm sure there'll be all kinds of pandemonium and a lot of pizzazz with this as he makes his return back to the ring in the octagon, Conor McGregor. And the Australian Open will begin on Monday. And the story is all the fires in Australia and other players that are voicing their concern about the situation in Australia, about the smoke and this and that, worrying about their health. And as one high-profile official representing the Australian Open said, and I quote, we have 3 indoor arenas.
Yes.
And I heard somebody the other day talking about, I really don't care that the players are a little bit concerned about their health when all these other people live in Australia and the billion, and I said it with a B, billions of animals that have died that had nowhere to go have a hard time feeling really concerned about the tennis players and their health. I understand that perspective.
Yeah.
I do. And I also understand as a player.
I understand where they're coming from, but yeah, I understand
player,
that perspective for sure.
I understand their perspective of, hey, listen, I don't want to, you know, should I bow out? Should I withdraw from this tournament or not? And here's, how about this for a first-round matchup on the women's side? Coco Gauff, who beat Venus last year, they're going to play in the first round. 15-year-old versus 39. Last time they played was the first round at Wimbledon, and Gauff won 6-4, 6-4. Old guard,
yeah.
New guard.
Oh, yeah. Very old guard now.
Yes.
It seems like
24 years old.
Crazy to me.
Yeah. I'll take the youngster in that one again, to be quite honest with you.
Yes.
All right, Chiefs, Titans. Hopefully the Chiefs can make the Super Bowl the first time in 50 years, and we'll have a tremendous show to have for you on Monday.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or sunflowerstateradio.com.